Are you looking to accelerate your career in global education? Well, I've got a solution for you. Introducing the Global Pro Labs Certificate Program. This is our online skills-based training that teaches you the foundational knowledge and core functions of global education administration. From education abroad advising and management to international student and scholar services, international admissions, program development and delivery, and marketing, each lab will teach you everything you need to know to hit the ground running in that specialty. Each lab is taught by thought leaders and scholar practitioners with decades of experience in their area of expertise. Join over 150 students who have gained the foundational skills needed to thrive in a global education career. Best of all, you can get certified without having to get a master's degree right now or attend an expensive conference. Ready to get started? Head to insidestudyabroad.com/labs. That's insidestudyabroad.com/LABS to enroll today. I can't wait to see you on the inside. You're listening to the Inside Study Abroad podcast, episode number 54. Welcome to the Inside Study Abroad podcast. I'm your host, Brooke Roberts. In this show, we explore the world of international education and meaningful travel with some fascinating guests, a little friendly debate, and a whole lot of practical advice. Let's get going. Hey everyone, welcome back to the podcast. And as promised, today I am sharing with you an updated interview with my friend Rich Kurtzman of Barcelona Study Abroad Experience. Now, if you're just tuning in, this season of the podcast, I am sharing some throwback interviews from interviews I did way back in 2010, 11, 12 that were only posted on the Inside Study Abroad YouTube channel. And I thought I would resurface that content, publish it here to the podcast, and then do an updated interview, like a where are they now, what are they doing now update with those same people and share them to the podcast as well. So this week we're talking with Rich Kurtzman, and our last episode, you can listen to basically part one, what was going on with Rich, his origin story, how he got started in international education, how he became basically a Spain expert and launched his career and grew his career and life over in Spain, and then built Barcelona Study Abroad Experience. In today's episode, we're going to talk more about BSAE and how they approached the pandemic, or the panini, as I like to call it, lightened the mood a little bit, how they approached what was going on in the world, the impact on the organization, how it helped them reframe and refocus on the things and the people in the organization that really mattered and that really played a critical role in creating meaningful experiences for their students, some creative things that they did to sort of stay afloat in a time when everybody was really struggling to keep their doors open or just keep study abroad alive in a lot of ways. So you'll learn all about that. Rich is also launching something really special coming soon in just a few months. So he talks a little bit about that as well. And I think you'll just really fall in love with Rich and his approach to global programs. And he's just a great guy and friend. And I'm so happy to have him in my life. Don't forget, everybody, tonight we are hosting our live webinar all about how to land a job in study abroad and global education. It's at 7 p.m. Central. There is a link in the description, or just go to insidestudyabroad.com/workshop to sign up. It is completely free. And yes, there will be a recording for those of you who pre-register. So make sure you get on the list at insidestudyabroad.com/workshop. We're going to be talking about how to stand out in a really competitive job market in global ed. There might seem to be a lot of jobs being posted right now for sure, but it's still hyper competitive for those roles. And so how are you going to stand out? How are you going to get at the top of the pile? How are you going to land an interview and make sure that that interview leads to a job offer? And we're going to be talking about all of that inside of this workshop. And of course, I'll be telling you about the Global Pro Institute, which is my course and coaching program all about launching and leveling up your career in international education. And you'll learn all about that at the workshop as well. This is our last cohort that we're offering. We won't be offering any other cohorts in 2022. So if you want to get involved in GPI, make sure you come to our webinar and get on the list to learn more about that. All right, enough announcements. Let's go to the show with Rich Kurtzman. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Inside Study Abroad podcast. I'm your host, Brooke Roberts, and today I'm chatting with my friend, all the way in Spain, Rich Kurtzman. He is the founder and director of Barcelona Study Abroad Experience, and he is part of my series of throwback interviews. Last week, you would have heard his original interview with me from over a decade ago. We were actually sitting in Barcelona at, was it CIE or? It was Wistic. Okay. Wistic. And we did that interview. So if you want to hear his origin story, go listen to that old throwback episode. And today we're going to be talking about what's going on with Rich today, what's happening with Barcelona Study Abroad Experience. So many changes in your life. We're going to get into all of it. So thanks for coming back to the show.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Great to talk to you again.
Why don't we talk a little bit about Barcelona Study Abroad Experience for people who aren't familiar with it? What is it and how did it get started originally? I know you started it back in 2009.
Yeah. Well, luckily since the last time we talked, I think more people are familiar with it, which is good. It's been 12 years now and yeah, we celebrated our 10 year anniversary in 2019, which is great. It was one of our best years, I would say. So Barcelona C was founded and started because I'd been working in Barcelona for a long time. I lived in Spain. I fell in love with Spain. And I wanted to start a program that was just focused on the city of Barcelona that I love so much. You know, I'm from Chicago originally, but moved out here in 2002 and worked for other study abroad programs. And I was teaching for other study abroad programs. And I was doing intercultural consulting. And I just thought, let's take everything that I learned from all these other great programs and put them into one just focused on Barcelona. And so that started in 2009 with a very small group and it started with just me. And luckily on both fronts, it's grown. So luckily I've got a big team now and it's not just the 8 students I started with anymore. And so yeah, it's a program that is focused on Barcelona. It's tried to attempt to have more personalized attention for the students and trying to do things like I would do it. I'm a real study abroad nerd. I did it myself several times in Russia and in Madrid, and I interned in Milan. And I love study abroad. It's pretty much the only thing I've done aside from teaching. And so I tried to do a program and thinking, all right, if I was going to a new city, how would I want it done? Mm-hmm. And so it's grown from then and it's had different permutations, I would say, along the way. Yeah. Programs added, programs deleted.
Yeah.
And now, especially after the pandemic, we're in a pretty good place.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious. I didn't prep you on this. I did not submit the topics. I told you we're going to go off on tangents here, but I want to talk about, I think it's because you're my Barcelona expert. I mean, you're the person I'm like, people have questions about Spain. I'm like, Dr. Rich Kurtzman. I feel like there is something about Barcelona, right? It's a top destination in a normal period. I feel like it has a stereotype of like, you go there any given summer, it's going to be hard to meet a Spaniard. You're only going to meet a bunch of American students, which may or may not be accurate stereotype, but I'm curious, how do you design a program in a location like that so that there are opportunities for students to get outside of their programmatic bubble or the students that they're with all the time, or just even other students from other programs that might be there. Because we know like a lot of the big providers, they're sending maybe 1,000 students to Barcelona. How do you navigate that in a place like Barcelona where it is very popular?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm glad you did bring it up. Barcelona is just, first of all, it's an amazing city full of locals, right? Locals that could be Spaniards, could be Catalans, could be other people from Europe. I mean, it's such an international city as well. And it's a city of 1.6 million people, right? So the 1,000 study abroad students is a small dot of all the students, of all the people that are here and of the students that are here, because it's a top destination also for Erasmus, for students from other parts of Europe. So it is full of students and not just American students. The American students is a small percentage of it. And I think in any location, whether there's a lot of Americans or not, it's more up to the student and the program to figure out how to get them more integrated. Mm-hmm. And so what we do is, well, we push homestays when they can do homestays. We do intercambios, so language exchanges with local universities. We find out what the students like to do, what are their hobbies back home, what are their interests, and then see how they can do it here and how we can help them do it here. So you're a yoga person. Imagine coming to study abroad in Barcelona and we find you a yoga class where you're in there with all locals. Mm-hmm. So, and that is even more motivating because you're doing something that you really love and you're doing it with local people and hopefully practicing the language as well. And yoga is just one example of anything you could find,
right,
and everything you can find in Barcelona. And so we, from before the students even get here, we are talking to them about how to get integrated. So we've made up the Barcelona SAE bucket list. And these are 100 experiences that we want students to do, to discover, to explore while they're here. And it's not just like, go see the Sagrada Familia and check it off your list. Mm-hmm. It's like, talk to a local about Catalan identity, mm-hmm. or find somebody named Jordi, because Jordi is the most popular name in Catalonia, and trying to give them activities that will spark some kind of connection or conversation with local mm-hmm. people. And it's broken up also by barrios, by the different neighborhoods. And so one of the barriers, I think, for students to go out and do more things is they just don't know what to do. So if you've got this curated, tailor-made guide that we've said, go to the San Antonio neighborhood, and when you're there, try to find these things when you're there. Mm-hmm. And then same for Gracia and same for Poble Sec and all the different neighborhoods of Barcelona. Mm-hmm. Every single week, we send out the weekly cultural agenda that we put together. It's not a link to Time Out. It's like, this is what Barcelona SAE thinks that you could or might like doing this week for free, for cheap, for festivals going on in Barcelona. Mm-hmm. And that's when we're not with the students. And when we're with them, we're taking them to these different neighborhoods. Because I also think students are human nature. You're kind of afraid to go to a new neighborhood if you mm-hmm. if you haven't been there before. But once you step foot in it, you're like, ah, this is cool. I can do it. I can go back. It's yeah. it's a microcosm of what study abroad does mm-hmm. for people. It makes them feel comfortable. And then they can go and do a little bit more and a little bit more mm-hmm. and push out that comfort zone. So we're trying to break down all of those barriers to why a student wouldn't get to go meet locals mm-hmm. or wouldn't go see a new part of the city or wouldn't push themselves out of their comfort zone. We try to be that support network while they're there through those things I said, through our cultural mentor program. So each staff member has a small group of 10 to 12 students and each staff is a mentor, a cultural mentor to them. So we meet them, talk about their goals, take them out for coffees mm-hmm. And try to get them to, you know, maybe tell us about some of their fears and how we can help them through it.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah, it's a real concern on people's minds, but honestly, it's not a concern on our mind because I think mm-hmm. because we just do Barcelona and this is what we've been doing for the whole time. Mm-hmm. It's a huge goal of ours.
Well, I love that. That's the first time I've really ever heard an on-site person talk about those elements. So for instance, the idea of a student being into yoga, let's find you a yoga community like here in Barcelona. Mm-hmm. I really love that. In the Study Abroad Journal, which I know I've shown you before, that was mm-hmm. one of the core things that we actually integrated into that, because that same idea is that, you know, especially when a student's preparing to study abroad, it's all about like, which classes are you going to take? So there's that academic component. Maybe they'll do an internship. So there's the career component. Obviously, you know, it's culture because it's a new place. So there's like that cultural, you know, focus. But then we added something we call the wild card goal. And it, we talk about in the journal, like, so let's say you're into punk music and you're studying abroad in Tokyo. So how do you go, you know, yeah. find the punk music scene in Tokyo or Barcelona or wherever you might be going, and really giving students that permission to pursue their curiosities that might be outside of, you know, academia or the career path that they're exploring. I really love that because I think you're right. It gives them that sense of ownership and excitement around exploring something new, location wise yeah. or topic wise, that isn't always have to be like, oh, are you going to get credit for it? Or is this aligned with my career yeah. path? Yeah. I love that. I love
Absolutely.
That.
I think that motivation is just so much more intrinsic when you have that. Mm-hmm. We've had students that have, they're guitar players and they joined a band here.
Yeah.
And like, what an amazing experience to join a band with local students, international students. Mm-hmm. We had a student who's an entrepreneur student and wanted to start his own barbershop. So he went around in one of his classes, actually, it was part of the class, but he had to go and interview different barbershops, went back to Riverside, started his own barbershop. And now he's starting another one now and he's starting a chain of it.
I love that. Just, yeah.
It harks back to Barcelona. And it's, you, I mean, you could be in a city where you're the only American and not have any integration mm-hmm. because it's up to you. Do you mm-hmm. know what to do? Do you feel comfortable doing it? Do you have the support you need? So, yeah, there's a lot of Americans around here, but, you know, especially compared to the 1.6 million people that are here. And Barcelona is just a city that draws people in. There's so much you can do.
Yeah.
So, you know, students are never bored. Students always have someone that they can go talk to. And nowadays, you know, we've got students that are on Tinder and they're meeting locals that way, right? Yeah. It's like, and they're doing it back home and they do it here. Or, you know, students, I think, are in some ways, they're more willing to go and do that and get out of their comfort zone. In other ways, unfortunately, they've got Netflix. They could just sit at home and watch Netflix if they wanted to.
Right.
And not everybody's ready. Not everybody's ready at the same time.
Like, you could say, yeah, okay, Netflix is a problem. But honestly, like, even when I studied abroad, I remember in 2001, I was a freshman in college studying abroad in Geneva, Switzerland. I'm a very shy person. And, you know, I need people to kind of push me to interact. And it was really hard the first couple of months for me to get that courage to find, you know, the things that could get me out of my room, so to speak. And I remember finding like a bookstore that still had like a little English section and like bought like four books. And so I would like go to my little room after class and read my books, you know, and not really integrate because I had a lot of those fears. I had a lot of those hangups around just going for it and making the fool of myself speaking my broken French. Right. So I feel like it's not necessarily a technology thing that can keep a student from engaging. They can find a lot of excuses. I know I did at first around that. Yeah. So I love all of these ideas. I love the idea of the bucket list. I feel like every program and every location around the world should probably have something like that. That's not just like, here's time out, go check out what they say to do. Obviously I'll link to BSAE. You can learn about all their programs. I have another question about that. Actually, let's just do that one now. A lot of times when I talk to people who especially design their own programs, whether they're in-house in a university or a provider, there's always like the programs that are huge and everybody loves them and they don't have any problem getting students on it. But everybody also has their baby, their program. They were like, I wish more students would do this program. I call it the sleeper program that is like super amazing, but not a lot of students do it. And you wish more people knew about it. Might be like under-enrolled in your opinion. Do you have a program like that with BSAE that you're just like, more students need to do this program?
Yeah, I would say we have a program that is a travel program. We're always going to be in Barcelona and use Barcelona as a base, but we've got a program called the Peoples of Spain. So it's a diversity focused program and it's based in Barcelona, but then we go travel around Spain to look at the different identities throughout Spain and reflect on identity in general for the students from back home and cultures and microcultures. Well, I think it's under enrolled because we just started it during the pandemic. So no one's really been able to do it yet. But I hope that students would like it because it's given them an opportunity to see other parts of Spain with us as well and with a faculty member going around. And it's something that I think everyone can relate to because we're all trying to figure out our identities, I think, especially when you're in college and and how your identity shifts when you're in different cultural contexts. And so students will be able to see that not just in Barcelona, but in the different regions and then look at Catalan identity versus Spanish identity and how Catalan people see that, but also how the rest of Spain sees Catalonia and this fight for it. So I think that's one that we haven't been able to get off the ground yet, but I think that we really hope students will do it. We're doing a lot more focus on DEI since the last time that we talked, which was a long time ago. We have an initiative that we started a few years back called Todos. So Todos in Spanish meaning everyone. And it's the diversity outreach program. So it's the outcomes-based diversity outreach strategy, if you want the whole thing. And it's got several pillars to it. One is to provide more financial resources to underrepresented students to help people get abroad that couldn't have that experience, which, you know, a lot of people are doing. So that's great. Outreach to MSIs, so minority-serving institutions, HBCUs, a lot of people are doing that too. But I think a couple of things that we're doing that are unique is intercultural training. We're doing intercultural and DEI training for our students, our staff, our faculty, and homestays, for example. We'll do diversity training for you know, Spanish woman who's 65 years old and never heard the term PC and certain sayings and things in Spain that are, you're like, whoa, you cannot say that. But they're like, you know, typical people would say it in Spain. And you say, well, from an American perspective, you can't say that. And let's tell you why. Now, we don't want to tell people what to say, what not to say, but let's understand the cultural context that people are coming from. And then increased cultural and academic program that's more focused on diversity. So we'll go and do a tour of the Raval neighborhood, which is the most diverse neighborhood in Barcelona, where more than 50% of the people that live there are not born in Barcelona or not from Barcelona. So we'll do a tour just focused on the diversity there. And then adding more classes like this Peoples of Spain class or gender studies classes that might be attractive to people who are looking to study something more surrounding diversity, equity, inclusion.
I love this idea of the Peoples of Spain program or any of these courses and initiatives. What I like about it, especially for maybe an American student who might have a pretty limited worldview in terms of their perspective on identities and multiplicity of identities. And if you frame it like, okay, we're going to go look at Spain where they have all these different identities. They already anticipate like, oh, that's Spain. And so of course I'm just going to study it and look at it as this like other, but what you're doing is I feel like you're sliding in and be like, okay. And then how does that relate back to the United States? Cause I feel like sometimes in the United States, we can think, oh, it's like a monolith or very aligned or the where you live is very closed off from the rest of the world in a lot of ways. And so I like that you're kind of like slipping it in there and be like, oh, actually this is also true for the US. Let's talk about how this might have some parallels to what's going on in the US. I think that's really smart.
I think it's a topic that's come up a lot recently with me, and I'm doing some presentations at the WISE conference or at Forum conference, some of them around diversity. And this topic of, all right, so we're training students to become interculturally competent overseas, meaning being able to see things from someone else's perspective, being able to have empathy and walk in someone else's shoes, not judging right away, but looking, you know, below the iceberg to see really the values and beliefs. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, all right. So this student can go from America to Spain and see it from a Spanish perspective. But what happens when they get back home and they see somebody sitting next to them that's different from them, comes from a different culture? They should be able to do that same thing, but are we bringing it back to that? And I think that extra step is so important and is what really is, you know, we talk about changing the world. I think that is going to be a big step, is going back home and seeing things from the perspective of your neighbor and immigration. And I'm trying to push that next step as well.
I love that. Andrew Gordon and I have been talking for years about creating a program, an exchange program, a domestic exchange program between like my hometown in rural Kansas and Oakland, California. Because we talk all the time about like, getting people abroad is great, but get two very different populations in the United States. Those are two of them. And it
would be incredible to do.
We've been talking about it for years. We've never done it. Yeah. So maybe if I keep saying it out loud, we'll be forced to like someday like take action on it. But I completely agree. I feel like we can't talk about study abroad and what's going on today without bringing up the pandemic. And if you would be willing to share a little bit about how the pandemic impacted you and your organization. What was it like in those early days? How were you making decisions? And just generally speaking, like how has BSA weathered that storm?
Yeah, it wasn't easy, I would say. It hasn't all been bad, but it wasn't easy, especially at the beginning, those first days. So back in March 2020, it was a whirlwind, right? We had over 200 students on site at the time and had to get them all home very quickly, but also had to decide, should they be going home? And, you know, is it good to send all these students from here on a plane back to the US? Nobody really knew what was going on at the time so much. And how are the universities going to handle it and all that? So it was, that part wasn't easy. Once we decided, we need to send everybody home, this just won't carry on, which was hard in itself, just logistically. Then you have to think about your partner institutions, right? And the how we could help them, the financial part of it, the logistical part of it. And then I obviously had to think about my team and the company itself. You know, I naively thought, okay, so this is March 2020. We probably won't have any students at May term, probably not June term, but probably by July. By July term, we'll have some students back again, right, of 2020. And then started to see it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And if it doesn't happen, we need to do something quickly. So unfortunately, we had to let a lot of people go right away in those early days. So that was really hard. Some people had been with us for years. Other people had started 2 days before I just started and helping us get ready for the summer. And we're like, we're going to have to say goodbye for now. And everybody understood, I would say, and we tried to do it in the best way possible and send people off. I mean, these are team members that we obviously loved and worked closely with. But to think about the survival of the company was more important, because if not, we would never have students again. We would never be able to hire anyone else again. And so those first days were really rough. Really stressful. There's, like I said, there's some good that came out of it. We kept a core team. So we kept about a third of the team. So it was about 10 people or so at the time. And we really bonded because it was like, all right, we need to stick together. We need to do this. Like, what the hell are we going to do? I don't know, but we're going to figure it out. And so one of our core values of Barcelona is called Fempinya, which is Catalan term for we make pineapple.
Okay, I like it.
Which is why I've got a pineapple on my wall. So Brooke, you may have seen in Catalonia these human towers, the castellers climb on top of each other, right?
They just brought them back, I think, right? Like a couple of weeks ago?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, it's not very COVID friendly because you got Pinya. So the pineapple are all the people in the base that are bound together like this, really tightly together. And that's the team at the bottom that forms the base so that the others can climb up really high. So it's a perfect metaphor for teamwork at the base, the piña, so we make pineapple, to reach greater heights. And so we had this really core piña of people both in Barcelona and in the US, and just had to think, all right, what are we going to do? Like, how can we still help our university partners? How can we get through this? And of course, people took pay cuts and worked fewer hours. We started doing virtual, as everyone did, virtual internships. We did one thing that was really cool, which was a virtual global leadership summit for a school for underrepresented students. And I think that's one of the good things that have come out of this is that people started doing virtual, which is much more affordable for students that might not be able to pay for a flight or pay for housing when they're here and food while they're here, can't leave their jobs. And so it's still giving them some taste of the experience, although it's not the same, but it's still something. And this global leadership summit won some awards nationally and got some recognition to help students that otherwise wouldn't have had the opportunity. So I'd say that's good. Also, like if I ever became a business consultant, I would do the COVID test for you to a company and say like, all right, let's pretend everything shuts down. You can't do anything for months. Pretend you can start from zero. What do you do differently? And that's what we did. And we really had the time to look at things like, why are we doing that? Right? Like, I think we're doing it because of inertia. We've been doing it for years, but does any student really want a certificate of completion, right? Like our interns were getting handwritten, well, nicely printed out, but I was signing these certificates of completion. And by then we found like, you know, we give them at a farewell dinner and they would all be on the table when students got up to leave. Who wants it? Maybe 20 years ago, they wanted it.
Yeah.
Now they want a LinkedIn badge or a LinkedIn recommendation or something. And the amount of time that we spent like signing, printing these out, making sure they're all right, signing them. It's like, let's focus on the things that really give value to the students. I read a great book called The 80-20 Manager. It's called the Pareto Principle. So 20% of your effort yields 80% of the results. And it's so true in so many things. And so we're like, what is the 20% of what we do that really gives value to the students? And we found that it's when we can be with them, when we're doing a hike, when we're doing what I try to call slow study abroad, not just boom, 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 let's see this, let's see that. But it's like, let's go for a meal. Let's go for a walk around the city. Let's go for a hike and talk to the students. And then we can get that reflection from them and do the mentoring and get to know them. And those are the kind of things I think that that really stick with them, either us or obviously we bring local students in. And so, you know, how could we fit more of that in and get rid of some of the things that that aren't that useful? Same with programming. So some of those sleeper programs, sometimes they're asleep for a reason. Let's put them to sleep. Let's kill them. And so we got rid of some of those programs that only had, you know, three or four students on it, but were taking up 80% of our energy. And then let's focus on the programs like our School for International Studies, our own academic study center, where we control the classes. We see them all the time. We can make sure that each class has three field studies that really uses the city. We can train our faculty. You know, we can't do that for outside universities. And that's what we've done. So we've shifted our focus to.
Well, and I think that's really smart because I think one of the elements of the pandemic, I think it showed the analogy that like we're all swimming at the beach and we've all got waves coming up to our, you know, our neck, shoulder area. And then the tide rolled out with the pandemic and we realized, oh, there's a bunch of people swimming naked. They were not prepared for the change and the shifting of the world around them. And what I think it's shown for international ed, and I think this is a positive development, is that I think we had to get more clear and more precise, like you were saying, about what is our value proposition as international educators? Are we just finding housing, making sure they're registered for classes, handling any kind of emergency thing that comes up. And like, that's what we do. And my argument would be like, no, I feel like there's more value in our ability to engage in the non-scalable activities of the experience, right? Like you mentioned, going on the slow study abroad, right? Mm-hmm. Because for all intents and purposes, a student could be like, I want to go study in Barcelona. They can find an Airbnb for 3 months, which I've done, can do all the things because they have so much technology and systems around them that make that a seamless experience. But those small unscalable elements that we bring to the table as educators, hopefully, and that's our expertise that we actually bring. Those are the things that make us valuable as a field, as an industry. So I agree with you 100%, is like doubling down on the stuff that they can't go book that online in some booking engine. They need a professional on the ground to help facilitate those things.
And it's counterintuitive in some ways. And I like to think of it as, you know, Trader Joe's. Are you a Trader Joe's
of course,
fan?
Of course.
So Trader Joe's has evangelist fans that go there, and they've always done everything in a different way than other grocery stores have. Right? They have fewer options. And we know Americans love their options in grocery stores. Mm-hmm. They have 3 times as many staff. They pay their staff best of the market. So it goes against every, other grocery store and what they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. Yet they're so successful because they are providing that sort of mentor one-to-one. You go in and say, what salad dressing? You're like, oh yeah, let me tell you. And they really listen to you and they know what you want and they help you out. And it's like you said, scalability, which is a very business term.
Right.
And I came from an education background. I studied Spanish and Russian, and my master's is Spanish applied linguistics. So I said a little bit of business, but not much. So I didn't come at it from, how can we scale this? Or if we put more students in a group, we'll make more money and this and that. It's more about what would I like in study abroad? I would want somebody to show me around. I would want somebody to help me. If I like basketball, how can I play basketball here? Mm-hmm. Even if meeting the staff is part of it, if they're locals or somebody like me who's been here forever that is really passionate about international education and helping them through it. So it might be counterintuitive, but I think, it's worked for us, and we've grown over the years and gotten more partners and had thousands of alumni. Mm-hmm. Hopefully happy alumni out there.
Yeah. Go leave a review. Yeah. So I think that just kind of gets back to the core of there is, I think, constantly a battle. Think about the whole initiative Generation Study Abroad, right? It's like a million students abroad, which is purely based on numbers. And at some point, it is just like, get them in, get them out the door, get them over the ocean, wherever they're going. And then hopefully the rest takes care of itself in a lot of ways, which is challenging because, I've always referred to BSAE, I know it's much bigger nowadays, but as a boutique study abroad company. But I almost feel like more providers should be approaching it as if it is even if they're huge, even if they're 5 times the size of BSAE, they should be approaching it in a boutique perspective or mindset, because you're right. Like you can't be as focused on the experience and delivering a really quality experience for students if it is feeling more like herding, cows around a city together.
I give a shout out to DIS, the program started in Copenhagen, who are a fantastic program, and I really admire them. And they're huge, right? Mm-hmm. I think the last I heard, they had 1,200 students in a semester in Copenhagen. But their motto, and again, I'm no spokesperson for them, but at one point the motto was small within big, or something similar to that. Yeah. And I went and visited them. They opened the doors to me, and they're fantastic. And they really do it. So even though they have that many students, nobody knows they have that many students because they're in this little group or that group.
Yeah.
They have excellent teaching. Their classes that go into a core class, and so they've been able to maintain that boutique, if you will, ideal. It's really an inspiration. So
we're
not going to get that big. We don't want to get to 1,200 students. But even as we grow, we never want students to know how many students we have. It's like you're in this group and you're in this mentor group, and you're not going to feel like you're part of a herd ever.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you want to get to 1,200 students?
You're getting deep here.
Yeah.
So this is probably going off the topic of the podcast potentially, but do you know the story of the Greek fisherman?
No.
Teach us. All right, I'm going to summarize it quickly.
Okay.
And you can edit this out if you want. But
no, it's
so important CEO from Harvard Business School goes over to a Greek island for her. It's usually told as a him, but I'm going to use a her.
Okay.
For her, 10-day vacation, the 10 days she gets a year. And she's walking along the beach and it's 10 o'clock in the morning. This fisherman comes out with like three fish. And the CEO starts talking to the fisherman and says, oh, what do you tell me about this? And fisherman says, yeah, I just went and caught fish for my family. I'm going to go home, I'll cook it up for lunch with my family and my kids, probably take a little nap. And then this afternoon, just hang out with my friends. And the Harvard CEO goes, well, listen, I mean, I'm an MBA from Harvard. I can help you grow this. So what you could do is, stay out there longer. It's only 10 o'clock. Stay out there to the end of the day, start getting more fish, start selling them, make a little bit of money, start building that money up. And then you can buy another boat, hire some people, go out a bit longer, start to make more money. You can buy a bigger boat. You can set up a stand and make some money there. And then once you buy three or four boats, you got the staff going out for you and you can make sure it's all working. While you're doing that, you go to Athens and start up a restaurant, a fish restaurant, focus on this. And you got all this fish coming in, you start to wholesale. You could be, your money could be coming in. And then you set up a chain of restaurants and then you are, you're going to be a wealthy man.
Yeah.
And the fisherman says, oh, interesting. Well, how long would that take? And they said, well, I don't know, 20 years, you could probably have it done. And the fisherman said, yeah, okay. And then what? Oh, and then you retire. You can finish work at 10 o'clock, have lunch with your family, take a little nap and go spend time with your friends.
Yes.
Obviously the story is like, do you just appreciate kind of what you have now, a good life, doing what you enjoy, spending some time with your family, or do you kill yourself and work all these hours when I've got two kids that are 8 and 6.
Yeah.
Do I kill myself now and get to the point where I don't see them, but the company grows? So that's like, that's the
I think that's really smart. And I think so many follow-up questions that I don't even know where to begin because I think you're absolutely right. For instance, I still have aspirations to build $1 million company for no apparent reason. Like, I don't know why, it's just an arbitrary number. It makes no sense, but I remember when I was traveling, being a digital nomad, running my businesses, living all over the world, basically working 15 hours a week, making decent money, exploring these cities I was living in. And I remember thinking, even in those times, like, what life am I trying to achieve by hitting the next milestone?
Yeah.
$500,000.
And for who?
Whatever. Yeah, exactly. And not to say that I think there is something about, especially for women in entrepreneurship, there are so many barriers, and it is nice to sort of start breaking those molds of where they get investor funding. There's a whole other issue there. But for me personally, as what life am I trying to get myself to? This is a pretty freaking great life, right? And so why am I still striving? So that makes so much sense. Even if you're not an entrepreneur, I think even in your career, you can relate to why am I trying to go for the next big thing, the next big title, if I'm really happy in the work I'm doing with the type of institutional organization I'm with. I think there is like a balance between striving to challenge yourself and achieve new things, but also sort of living in the but I have a really great life here as well. And just sort of appreciating that. The question I want to ask you then is, back in the day, probably around the time we did our first interview, I remember because I was part of Global Educators, which is why we met. And back then there was talk about doing LSAE, London Study Abroad Experience. I think Prague Study Abroad Experience was maybe even on the table at one point, which were all going to be the Rich Kurtzman empire, if I'm recalling this correctly. And so was there a point when this parable came into your world and you started thinking about it in this way? Or was it just I don't want to grow the SAE empire?
Yeah. People ask me all the time, they like the model we have in Barcelona. So are we going to start up in other cities in Spain or in cities in Europe? And I've gone back and forth with it. First, I still think there is room, and especially back then, there was room to grow in Barcelona. Mm-hmm. And so we want to just make sure that we're doing this right. First of all, that's another reason why I might hesitate to try to get to 1,200 is, could we still do what we're doing now with 1,200 students? Mm-hmm. I guess DIS does it as far as I'm aware. So it can be done, but I don't know. It is part of that. And I think if I was still living in the US, so I think you said, but I lived in Barcelona for 19 years and now I just moved out just outside of Barcelona. This might be part of it. I'm living in a beach town. So I'm, 15 minute walk to the beach and life is a little bit slowed down here. I think if I was still living in the US and surrounded in those entrepreneurial cultural waters of yes, you have to go more, you have to keep going and you have to get bigger, that maybe I would be pushed in a different direction. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm entrepreneurial and I like growth because I like growth, not for growth's sake, but see, like, schools are coming to us because they like what we do. And it's hard to say no. And I don't want to say no to that. So I would like organic growth versus let's just push to grow and grow and grow. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot about the team and making sure that the team is, you know, the staff working here is trying not to grow in a crazy growth spurt. It's hard because we've had this pandemic where we've had small numbers. I mean, we had a group in spring of 2021, this past year, when almost nobody had it. We had like 12 students and it was awesome to just have 12. And then we had about 30 in the summer. Yeah. And then we have about 30 right now. But now there's an explosive growth for spring because we have this, the end of the pandemic, which is such the wrong term to use. The light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
Or in the middle of the tunnel, maybe, because I don't think it's the end of the tunnel. And so it's been stressful to come back and get ready for that. Mm-hmm. One of the great things, and going back full circle to one of your questions, is we've hired back some of those people that we had to let go back in spring of 2020. Great. So they've found other jobs in the meantime, and they're like dying to come back. We're dying to have them back. And so that's been really, really nice to form that team again. And we found some other amazing people that are out there and looking forward to the next, like that next step of solidifying the team, growing organically and still doing what we're doing with, you know, with the same mentality. When I had the first group of 8 students and I knew them all and I knew their names, that we can still do that with the mentor groups. And I won't know them all, but somebody on the team will. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I feel like this relates still to your Greek fisherman story, but you know, I am curious, since we've met, you've become a father, like you mentioned, you have a 6 and 8 year old, you said, and I'm just curious, like, how has becoming a father, like, changed, shifted, affected your approach to study abroad or thoughts about study abroad?
Maybe I'll start, if you don't mind, switching that question around.
Yeah, please. Think,
how has study abroad affected fatherhood?
Oh, interesting. And so, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so like I said before, but we're trying to get students to open their minds and see things from a different perspective. That's what I want my kids to grow up doing as well. And so my son is 8. He's already been to 10 countries with us traveling. Now, I know he won't remember them all, but trying to get him to be surrounded by different cultures, different ways of doing things, breaking them out of a routine. And my daughter as well, now 6. I think it's really good for them. And like all the sort of focus on diversity and equity inclusion with study abroad has really reinforced us doing that with our kids as well. And made me really see. So I don't know if you know Christina Thompson, who works with me, and she's becoming a big name in DEI. And she's our director of diversity initiatives. And she really like challenges me and challenges all of us to see things from a different perspective. And I've absolutely taken that and worked with my kids on it as well. And I think that's been really neat to see. And I just so believe in the values that we're teaching students in study abroad that, of course, I would want my kids to have it too. And so to go back to your original question, how has that changed it? I think I could see things from a parent's perspective a little bit better now. So I can think a little bit more of, well, what would I want for my son or daughter if they were studying abroad? When a parent comes in with sometimes it's like, oh, another parent called. I can understand it a little bit more now because I'm a parent too. So I think it's affected it in that way and helped me approach it in a little bit different perspective.
Yeah. So you feel like you can empathize with the parents a little bit more when they're upset about housing or what have you, safety issues. And you're like, okay, maybe 9 years ago, I would have rolled my eyes a little, but now I'm like, yeah, dude, I'm freaked out too.
I get it.
Yeah.
Roll my eyes sometimes. But
obviously we could probably talk for hours and we probably will again soon, someday over a bourbon when in person, not with a microphone in our faces. Get into the lightning round. Just some tools, resources that you feel like people in our industry or just professionals in general in any field could get a lot out of. So they don't have to be specifically international education related. So what is a book you think everyone should read in our field or just as a professional?
I read a book recently. It's probably a few years old now, but actually I have it right here. It's called The Power of Moments. Do you know this one?
No.
So I'm really into kind of social science and behavioral economics and things like that. But this book, so it's The Power of Moments, Why Certain Experiences Have Extraordinary Impact. And I read it. I'm like, this is study abroad.
Okay.
And it talks about what certain elements of life or of a program of education or whatever elevated to this extraordinary moment. And they've broken it down to a bit of a science of what it takes to do that.
Yeah.
And I think especially in study abroad, you're reading like, yes, this is what happens. Something is unexpected. Something mm-hmm. is elevated. It's a moment that wouldn't normally happen. It's an extreme sort of high. How to take those peaks and how to create them, or how to harness them once they are there, and even take some mm-hmm. valleys and say, oh, how could this be turned into a powerful moment? Mm-hmm. So for that, but also for parenting, for education, for business, they talk about how to make the first day of an employee an incredible moment that they won't mm-hmm. forget. Mm-hmm. And the science behind how important that first impression is and the last yes. impression. And then yeah. some peak in the middle, that's really important.
Yeah.
So easy read.
Love that.
Great. Yeah.
I'm definitely going to add that to my Amazon shopping cart, my Christmas list, if you will. That's yeah. a good one. Power of moments. Thank you for that. Okay. So obviously you lived in Barcelona for 19 years, as you said. Give us a little secret, little known Rich Kurtzman secret restaurant spot that we all need to go try next time we're in Barcelona.
If I give it to you, it won't be so secret anymore.
I know. I mean, all my millions of listeners are just going to flood this place. It's like right. They're flood an Anthony it. Bourdain recommendation at this point.
Yeah. All right. Well, for those of you out there listening. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in my old neighborhood called San Antoni, I would recommend a little bar called Bar Ramon. And it's this tiny bar that probably seats 20 people maximum. And they do amazing tapas there. Not okay. just your traditional tapas, but amazing tapas that are sitting out looking, and the wait staff are so helpful and friendly, and but mm-hmm. sort of in a Spanish way, not like yeah. an American. Yeah. Hi, my name is Isabel. How are you
yeah.
doing today?
Yeah.
And it's got these jazz posters all around. It's playing jazz. It's just a cool little spot. Bar okay. Ramon.
If we yeah. tell them that Rich Kurtzman sent us, will they know who that is?
Possibly. I walked in there once. It was funny because I take some visitors where they come in, and I walked in the once, and she's like, hey, oh, you're back. And I'd been there like one time. I just thought, oh, this is great. These people think I'm some kind of celebrity here.
I love that.
Things just recognize me from the neighborhood, but
yeah.
I don't know that they know my name. And yeah. and in Spain it's hard because it's Rich Kurtzman, and oh, nobody right. can really pronounce
right,
it.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. What's a favorite software or technology that you use or your team uses at BSAE that you just couldn't live without?
Well, it's probably not new to many people anymore, but we started using Slack maybe a year and a half ago. Again, during yeah. the pandemic, we had time to try some new things out, and it's really, really improved communication.
I love Slack. Email is
the bane of my existence.
Oh
and
my God.
Getting to the Work. Bottom of your inbox and impossible. Uh-huh. And so with Slack, it's been really helpful to communicate and reduce emails. And especially in a pandemic, you're not sitting next to somebody in the office. So you can mm-hmm. send off a quick message. You can save it for later. You can put do not disturb. So you have yes. those blocks of time that are really important.
Yeah. Yeah. I love, love, love Slack. And it made me like realize how stupidly most of us use email as like, yeah. we use it, especially in university campuses, is like often uses its own instant messenger. Like, I'm just going to send you like, are you free yeah. in an email? And I'm like, oh my
right.
God,
and that is not an immediate answer. Yeah.
yeah. yeah. Oh, it's the worst. So love that you're using Slack. Okay. Once, you know, you are feeling good and safe to travel, whether it's with your alone or with your family or with just with your wife, what's next on your travel bucket list? It could be a destination or just an experience you want to have.
I'm dying to go to Cuba. I like salsa music and salsa dance and merengue. And uh-huh. I know it's already starting to change, but I want to get to Cuba before it becomes too touristy and too many people have gone in there. So
well, lots of changes potentially right now. I mean, they're marching in the streets over the last few weeks.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've been watching what's going on there. It's an amazing place. I went back in 2019 cool. there for about a week and a half. And nice. I'm sure you would even get more out of it because you actually can communicate in Spanish, whereas I'm not.
And dance.
Yeah. Well, and dance. Yeah. I mean, I could communicate with the dance, baby. Oh yeah. But beyond that, I was like, yeah, I'm going to have to look that up. How do I say this? Oh yeah, but you would love it. It is a beautiful place. And I feel like, you know, when it comes to change in Cuba, a lot of like the nostalgia around and the parts of Cuba that I think we want to appreciate as non-Cubans, some of that is almost sad too, because it's like, they don't have the cool old cars because they're like, look, the cool old cars. They have those because there's no other option. They just can't get new things because of economic issues, or there just isn't product to be purchased. It's a very complicated, fascinating place. I mean, I want to go and spend way more time there. It is incredibly, incredibly fascinating. Cool. And I've only scratched the surface. So yes, you need to go and make it happen. And take me with you so you can be the translator.
Let's do it. Yeah. To be clear, obviously I don't want to be like, oh, I hope they don't have a better life so that I can experience what it's like.
No, of course. Yeah.
It's like, I don't want to go if it's going to be McDonald's and Starbucks and I want to experience the local places. And
I think, you know, it is, I think it's just one of those things that is just, it's a juxtaposition of any place we travel to, right? We want the quote unquote authentic experience, whatever that is.
Yeah.
It, you know, it's sort of like the argument I think we've heard, hopefully the argument like died away, but you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, hearing people talking about students having a phone or having access to the internet during study abroad, as if like that would ruin their experience, when like the students in the place they were studying had internet or had phones or what have you, whatever the new technology was at the time, as if like it is inauthentic to have internet in Barcelona or something like that. And I'm like, no, they have internet in Barcelona. I just think there's a constant pull between what is quote authentic and what is just a modern society that has evolved with technology and everything that comes with it, anywhere in the world, right? You can go to places around Asia and it's the same kind of thing where it's like, oh, let's go see the authentic village. And I'm like, is it authentic or is it what we want it to be as the other, you know, coming in to look at it? So, you know, these are the issues we're constantly grappling with, hopefully, with our students.
So
I guess my next question for you, but I feel like you kind of gave me a great idea. I need to get someone from DIS on the podcast, but if I were to get somebody else on the podcast in international ed, who would you recommend I interview next?
Yeah, DIS, they're great. They're fantastic. There. I would suggest, and she's not in international education, but she's done international education, is Amanda Gorman, who was the poet laureate at Biden's inauguration, studied abroad in Madrid. Yeah. And she talks about that sometimes. And so that would be really interesting to see how her experience led her to where she is, if it did, or affected. And I don't know if you can get her. She's a big star now.
I know. She's a superstar. That'd be a huge get. I'd be like, oh, look at that. That'd be great. I've thought about getting more people on the podcast who aren't necessarily professionals international ed, but who had a meaningful international experience in study abroad of some kind. Yeah. And so I don't know. I feel like I need listeners to get back to me and let me know if you want to hear those stories. That'd be great. Okay, Rich, you are writing a book, which is so exciting. Why don't you tell us about it? It's a book for students about study abroad. Tell us, what is it called? What is it about? And when can we all buy one?
So as you know, I've been in study abroad since I was a baby. No, I studied abroad when I was a sophomore in college. And then since then, it's been basically my whole life. And I thought it was time to put it all in a book. So a book for students that are going to study abroad and are studying abroad. It's called Like a Fish in Water, How to Grow Abroad When You Go Abroad. Ooh, so it's full of
alliteration.
Thank you. It's full of activities that I hope students will do to help them get more integrated, to meet more locals, to help them reflect on the experience a little bit more, so they don't just skim across the cultural surface, but they dive deep down under the cultural iceberg, as you know, to really be able to observe the cultural differences, get more out of it, reflect on why people do the things that they do in other cultures, but then turn that around and say, well, why do I do the things that I do? And learn more about themselves. I always say to my students that you learn as much about yourself when you go abroad as you do about the culture that you're in. And so the book walks the students through all of these steps at different stages and focus on communication, focuses on food and culture, which is a course that I used to teach, focus on personal space issues. And it's not destination specific. So it's mostly written for American students that are going abroad anywhere else and can use these activities. And then at the end, it's about how to use all of those experiences to help them get a job. And it's not solely focused on getting a job. It's focused on how we just grow in general, how you can become more adaptable, more confident, more empathetic, right? And all these core, the soft skills or the core competencies that companies are looking for, but also make for a happier, healthier life. I'm pretty excited. When can it come out? It's not done yet, so I'm still working on it, but it should be out in early 2022. So hopefully February or March
it would be available. Wow, that's so exciting. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay, great. I'm assuming it'll be available on Amazon.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
So Amazon, barnesandnoble.com, paperback, hardcover.
Okay.
Great. Possibly Audible. Maybe, I don't know if you wanted to do voiceover.
Oh my gosh. I don't know that you want my voice.
You got your podcast voice.
I got my podcast voice. Yes. I did get on my other podcast. Somebody left a review saying that Brooke has the most soothing podcast voice. And I was like, I don't think my mom left that review, but it sounds like something my mom might say, but it wasn't. It was someone I didn't even know. So maybe in certain moments I have that voice, but I would love to do your Audible book. Very proud of you. Can't wait to read it and get my hands on it. We'll link to it if it's available when this comes out, link to the show notes. If not, Rich will have it all over his stuff. So go check it out.
It'll be coming soon. Awesome. Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you so much for coming back on the show. And I will link to Rich's LinkedIn account, obviously to Barcelona SAE, where you can go find them all over the internet, wherever you want to engage with them in and reach out to Rich and find out how you can get your students on one of these sleeper programs in Spain that he's been putting on. So thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Brooke. It's been fun. Good catching up.
I hope you enjoyed that updated conversation with my friend Rich Kurtzman of Barcelona's Study Abroad Experience. Of course, I'm going to link to Rich and BSAE and his website for his book and all the good stuff down in the description and the show notes over at insidestudyabroad.com/blog. And of course, don't forget, tonight is our one and only live free training all about how to land a job in global education in 2022. Be there or be square. Do I sound like an 80s kid? Because I am an 80s kid, but be there. I would love to help you, give you some coaching and advice on how you can launch and level up your career in the new year. And of course, you'll get to learn all about the Global Pro Institute and how you can join our next cohort. And remember that every day you postpone a dream, you weaken it a little. So get out there and make some magic happen. Cheers. Are you looking to launch and level up your career in international education? Well, look no further than the Global Pro Career Institute. This is our online career development program that covers it all, from articulating your compelling brand and signature story to strategically stacking your body of work and growing a powerhouse network of champions. This program will help you become a dream job magnet in global education. The strategies I teach aren't just theory. In fact, it's a proven framework that I've used over the past two decades to land highly competitive jobs, go from intern to executive in 4 years, and get headhunted by numerous companies. Join over 500 students who have learned how to master the big three: their resume, cover letter, and LinkedIn profile. Our students have gone on to stand out in a very crowded job market, land on the elusive yes pile of resumes, and wow hiring teams with their tailored, authentic, and purpose-driven applications. The Global Pro Career Institute is the only career development program for aspiring global educators, meaning you don't already have to have a job in the field to get started. If you're ready to jumpstart your career in global education and skip to the front of the line, enroll in the Global Pro Career Institute and dive right into the content. I promise you won't regret it. Go to insidestudyabroad.com/GPI to get started, and I'll see you on the inside.